Welcome to Milwaukee Momcast, a podcast dedicated to real stories for real parents. Produced by Milwaukee Mom, we'll tackle a variety of topics in a way we hope will make you laugh, make you think, and remind you that this whole being a parent thing can be a little wild, but at least we're in it together. So, reheat your coffee, grab the headphones, and get comfy while we chat all things motherhood with a Midwest twist. Hello, everyone. Today's guest on Milwaukee Momcast is Sarah Ornst Bloomquist, the co-founder of Mom's Mental Health Initiative in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, an organization that seeks to stand in the gap for women as they navigate the landscape of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. That's a heavy topic, and there's so much to talk about. So in this conversation, we hope that you find information, encouragement, resources for either you or somebody that you may know, but we also want to make sure that everybody listening knows that there are topics discussed today that could be triggering for some folks who have dealt with either mental health challenges or disorders, especially in the perinatal or postpartum times of their life. So with that being said, let's jump into today's episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Milwaukee Momcast. Today, we are talking with Sarah Ornst Bloomquist, one of the founders of Mom's Mental Health Initiative here in the Milwaukee area. So today's conversation is going to really dig into mental health for women and moms in particular. We're talking about perinatal mood disorders. We're talking about postpartum depression, anxiety, all of the different aspects of mental health as it relates to motherhood that oftentimes are either misunderstood or not talked about in the way that they should. And so I just kind of also want to, you know, issue that trigger warning for folks who are listening who either may be struggling with issues like this or may have survived through issues like this. We're really going to talk about this in a way that we want you to feel seen and feel heard, but it also may be a little bit difficult to relive if that is something that you have gone through. We also want to encourage you that if, as you're listening, this is sounding familiar, we're going to make sure to provide resources for you to reach out and get help if this is really resonating with the experience that you are going through right now. So with that being said, I want to introduce today's guest. Sarah, tell us about you. I'm so excited that you're here.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here as well. And I'm just such a big fan of you and, well, it's true. And well, Milwaukee Mom.
We're a fan of you, too.
Well, thank you. I am Sarah Ornst Bloomquist, and I'm the co-founder and executive director of Mom's Mental Health Initiative. We launched Mom's Mental Health Initiative, or as we like to refer to it as MMHI, back in March of 2016. And we really started it, my co-founder, Becky Schrader, and I. We started it because we felt like women in the greater Milwaukee area were having a really difficult time getting effective and efficient treatment for postpartum depression, or you can refer to it as maternal mental illness or perinatal mental illness. We just saw the uphill battle for moms with getting help. And so that's why we started it.
That's a tall order. That is like, that's like a massive undertaking. So, because at the time, you know, you guys both had young kids, didn't you?
Correct. I had two little ones. I myself had gone through postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety twice.
Twice?
Correct. Ugh. And my partner had experienced postpartum anxiety with her first. And when we launched Mom's Mental Health Initiative, she was, I believe, pregnant at the time or had just had her baby. Mm-hmm. I can't remember dates. I'm a mom, so
it's a blur.
I blame it all on that.
Yeah. But I can't remember my kids' names half the time.
Right.
I need to shout whichever one of them they end up. I end up running through all of them, sometimes even throwing the dog's name in there. Yeah, exactly.
Get over here.
Yes. Hey, you.
So, yeah, that's that was a very busy time. And my children, gosh, how many years ago was that? Like almost four years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a three-year-old and I had probably he's around eight. So, and then my mom passed away during that time and she never got to see Mom's Mental Health Initiative get launched. And my father passed away slowly after that. And they were very inspiring for me because they were my life source when I went through it. So it was a tall order, but at the same time, it was needed, and it wasn't difficult to get a response from our audience.
For sure.
There was a need, and we were filling it.
Yeah. So in addition to you both having gone through this, in some way, shape, or form, you also have like some educational background that you bring to the table for MMHI as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I have a helping profession background. I'm a certified family life educator and a certified life coach. I worked in some nonprofit settings as a relationship specialist, a family support specialist, doing some wellness coaching, and I also worked at a crisis pregnancy center as a counselor.
Okay.
So besides my personal experience, I do have professional background, and so did my co-founder.
Yeah. So, okay, so 2016, you guys both have, you know, young kids. One of you, for sure, at least is either pregnant or has a baby. And so you see this need and you say, let's get together and fill that need. What did that look like just in the beginning stages when you were envisioning what Mom's Mental Health Initiative would look like? What needs did you look to fill, and kind of what were those first steps that were taken just in that infancy stage?
Sure. We met each other at an event called Climb Out of the Darkness for an organization called Postpartum Progress, which no longer exists, but they still have some great resources online, particularly at the mom's level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just these scientific research what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. But anyway,
academics?
Yes.
There we go.
It's not from that type of background, but more of let's just talk mom to mom.
Yeah.
But we met and with some other ladies, and we all decided to form a little Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
And we just would find solace in one another and encourage one another. And Becky said to me, you know, I think we should look at doing a little bit more advocacy in the area. And that sounds like something you'd be good at. And I said, well, okay, I do have a background. I worked as a child advocate in Indiana, and sometimes I can be a little fierce. So I kind of thought about that, and we just kept talking and talking. And then I shared that information with a therapist who is in Mequon. Her name's Rose, and she's really one of the leaders, I think, in the community when it came to serving moms with postpartum. She was doing this before it was really ever discussed. And she said, you know, I have someone for you to meet. And she connected me with, at the time, it was Columbia Center Birth Hospital.
Okay.
And they had a CEO who was very passionate about mental health. Her name is Candy. And she met with us and she said, this is what I want to see. And gave us some money, gifting. We weren't affiliated with them, but they had some gifting that they needed to share, and connected us with a marketing company, and they helped us get branded. And we, it's MacDill Advertising. They really just grasped what we were trying to do and helped us get that. You need the professionals to help pull it out of you. And through these conversations, she said, you know, I really want to see moms being able to get help faster. And basically, that's where we were coming from, too.
Yeah.
We just saw people waiting. We went through just horrible time getting help for when we went through it. And so that's what it looked like. And then, you know, it's just a lot of trial and error and discussion and what's working and what's not.
Yeah, definitely.
But I honestly, we haven't really changed much of our mission over time, and we are just very solid in what we do and want to do it well. So we don't say yes to everyone because we want to say yes to what we see is really needed.
Yeah, totally. And we'll talk more specifically about you know, the services that MMHI provides and those missions, but I think it can be both a blessing and a curse when you have a friend who sees something in you that like, "Oh, you would be so great at this." Because it's like it's so affirming to have somebody be able to see, "Oh, they've got this. They can see this trait in me. They can see this gifting or this skill. Then they get you into stuff. And then yeah. 3 years later, happened. You look back.
Mm-hmm. She was right.
And you're like, doggone it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, thank you for inspiring, you know, this part of me that I didn't know was there. But also, oh my God, I'm so tired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Tiredness just. Par for the course in general.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So before we really get to dig into, you know, the nuts and bolts of MMHI and your mission and vision and all of that good stuff, I want to just kind of, you know, replay the tape a little bit and go back to, you know, the prior times before that and talking about in more broad terms when we're discussing mental health for moms. Just a little while ago, and depending on when this airs, it'll depend on the amount of time ago, but our girl Meghan Markle, so Duchess of Sussex, there was this interview that came out that she did following the birth of her child, and it kind of sent shockwaves across the media because, you know, she's used to being asked about, you know, oh, how are you doing? How's Harry? You know, da-da-da-da-da. You know, who are you wearing? Who made your shoes, etc. And this one interviewer actually came out and asked, you know, are you okay? Has anyone asked if you're okay? How are you doing? And it was just a little bit, it kind of felt like it hit me in the gut when you watched her response, because you could see the tears fill her eyes just a little. She kind of caught her breath in her throat. And she said, you know, not many people have asked if I'm okay. And then it was almost like evasive at first. And then the interviewer says, so are you okay? She goes, it's been hard. I'm not really that okay. And it was, I think it was, it opened up this conversation for a lot of people, because somebody who's so visible and so, you know, relatable and in the media across, you know, multiple continents was actually saying, I'm not okay. And it made me think about how sometimes it feels like we have to give ourselves permission to not be okay, even in our little, you know, plebeian peasant lives, mm-hmm. you know, let alone, right? Or, you know, let alone being a duchess. And then you and I started talking about that. So when it comes to these conversations about that postpartum or perinatal mood conversation, how have you seen those conversations change just over the course of the time that you've been a mom?
That's a great question, because I think it has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
Hasn't changed enough, but it definitely has changed. I think social media has really helped with that. So when I had my son, who, by the way, is named Archie as
really?
Well.
Yes.
Oh, I had it before the Duchess.
Okay. So real talk. Were you like pumped, or were you going, doggone it, the Duchess took my name?
Yeah, doggone it.
Doggone it, really?
Oh. I was like, no.
It stopped being so unique.
I did it first. No. I've done it first.
You were like, crap, now it's going to be trendy.
Right,
ugh,
right.
Okay.
But that's okay. My son's name is Arch. That's his given name. So we'll just go with that.
Oh, that's cool. Right.
So anyway, I had Arch about almost 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And social media just was starting to get going. You know, I just got a Facebook page, and
I love how we talk about that like it's like really far, like a long, long time ago. Like, you know, back in my day, right. When you had to have a .edu email address to have Facebook, because for the record, right here, me,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I had to have my .edu
yes.
when I was a student.
Yes, I, it's just like when my daughter's like, so when you were little in the olden days and yeah. all the photos were black and white, right? I'm like,
no, stupid.
Mm-mm. No. The 80s are the olden days. So
I cleaned out my closet a while back and I found a Canon PowerShot. You remember those?
Wait, what is that?
The little cameras?
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that slim little Canon PowerShot camera that we all had that would fit in your purse? And we were like, everybody had one. And it was the coolest thing, right? I found one and I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And it was like top of the line. It had like a 2.8 megapixel image.
Oh my gosh.
It was,
that's awesome.
Isn't that terrible?
I just think of all the photographs. Like I go on trips and just take so many pictures with film and then get them developed and be like,
uh-huh.
This looks so bad.
Yeah.
And remember the waiting period? For them all.
Yeah, you had to wait like 3 days to
and then
a
1 hour photo came out and it was like,
oh,
yes.
Yes. That was like the closest thing we had to instant gratification. It was like dropping it off at Walgreens or the corner drug and being like, okay, I got to go kill an hour. What am I going to do? I need my pick. And then like, garbage, you know, mm-hmm. like throwing away half of them, even though you paid for the whole roll. And,
right.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Tangent.
Okay.
Tangent down memory lane. So Facebook just came out. Social media was just starting to become a thing.
And the only time I really ever heard about postpartum depression was when I saw Brooke Shields on Oprah.
I remember this.
And she talked about her experience and she talked about her intrusive thoughts and talked about just seeing herself drive into a tree. And, you know, I saw her give that talk before I had children. And then when I started going through what I was going through when I had my son, that was the only thing that gave me a little bit of an ability to breathe by saying, well, Brooke Shields went through this. Okay. Yeah. Something's going on. This is what Brooke Shields went through.
But even then, it was met with all kinds of criticism and
shame. Cruise saying, you know, you're being glib to Matt Lauer and talking about medication and shaming her for taking medication. And, you know, it just... So there's so much stigma on all these obstacles, even when someone does speak out. Like Brooke Shields was so brave in doing that. So I had that there. I got her book, Down Came the Rain. I kept flipping to the end to find out when does she get
How
better.
How does the story end?
Please, do you get
Where's
better
the happy
soon?
Where's the happy ending? Yeah.
When does that happen? And I remember seeing on Tyra at the time.
Oh, yes.
They had a few people on who were going through PPD. And, you know, I think I was starting to be in recovery when I watched that. I'm not sure. I can't really remember. But that was very vivid in my memory.
Yeah.
But, you know, there just wasn't support groups online. There wasn't, you know, people online and Facebook really talking about it. I wasn't scrolling through articles online then. You know, it just... It was different. It was very different.
Yeah.
My OB never discussed it with me, never did a mental health history, never screened me. So, you know, when it started happening, and because I have a history of depression and anxiety and kind of worked in the field and have had seen some family members experience it, I was able to say something's not right,
something's not right,
but I wasn't getting the response that I should have gotten. And that just made my illness go even longer, even with my OB, you know, just saying something's not right. Okay, just drink some more water. And that's what
Take
I was told.
Take a nap, sleep when the baby sleeps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, meanwhile, Thanks. I'm vomiting every time I look at my child or I get up and I'm the panic. I'm just panic stricken.
Right.
It was horrible. So at that time, you know, there just wasn't that kind of conversation. There was a therapist in my area. This was in Indiana. And I was able to connect with her, but it not wasn't like there is today as far as, you know, every hospital usually has somebody or they have this mentioned on their website in the maternity area. That just wasn't at all there.
You had to seek it out. You had to dig and really push. And
I think there was a brochure in my folder. Oh,
yeah. Like the trifold brochure. Yeah. In your congratulations, you just had a baby. Here's all the things that you need.
Right.
Pack it when you leave the hospital. Like here's a pack of diapers and a brochure on postpartum depression.
Right.
Good luck.
Exactly.
Oh, it was right next to the pamphlet that says don't shake the baby.
Right. Yes.
Here's the pamphlet that says don't shake it. And also, you know, and if you have baby blues, you should probably say something. But, you know, good luck knowing what that is.
Right.
And then on top of it, there were several kind of high profile cases and these situations of moms who were experiencing, obviously a mental break of some sort. You know, this is high profile stuff in the news of them harming their children.
Right.
And there's this inaccurate information out there about why and what's going on. And so you're scared. It's scary.
It is. You know, in the media, they sensationalize situations
everything.
And they... make these big deal out of these stories, but they make it out in a very negative way. And so these women who are experiencing postpartum psychosis, which is totally different than postpartum depression, and it's extremely rare, and it's extremely rare that anyone does hurt their child when they're psychotic, but you know, they say, oh, that's postpartum depression.
Yeah.
So when a mom, like for me, you know, when I heard I might have postpartum depression, I was like, oh, wait,
I can't be trusted with my baby.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, then we get.
Which just makes it even worse.
Oh, it's just, it's infuriating because it's not accurate information. And do we do that about other diseases? I don't think we do it to the same degree as we do with mental health.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, because never are you like getting information about something like, I don't know, diabetes, you know, it's never like, you know, villainized in that sort of way, you know, and this it kind of becomes almost this monster that women fear, that they are misinformed about, that you have this kind of like, and it also my son is 12, so you and I kind of became parents around the same time. And I remember also having this feeling of not knowing and being afraid of what I didn't know.
Right.
You know, because again, when we're talking about either misinformation, lack of information, lack of mental health screenings, because I don't recall having a particular specific screening. I remember going in for my 6-week check and being like, how are things going? And me being like, fine, I think. I don't know.
Is this what it's like for everybody?
I can't. I you know, I still hate going to the bathroom and it sort of sleeps and I think it's eating. And then, you know, how are you doing? I'm tired. Okay, the end. Bye.
Oh, that's normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. You know, like see you in a few moments. So I don't really recall any of that. So then there's this fear of, well, how do I know if I'm right or well or whatever? How do I know if the thoughts that I'm experiencing at 2 a.m. while I'm struggling to get this baby to latch and I can't stop crying, how do I know if that's regular, if this is okay, if this is normal, or if it's not? How, you know, because where does that line happen when you haven't been taught anything about it? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I'm like having this, not only the fear of this, but also the fear of not knowing what I don't know.
There's a lot of fear and terror that can grip you when you're going through this, especially because your idea of how you thought it was going to be is completely different than what it is.
Yeah.
And then if I do say something, what does that look like about me as a mother? What are people going to think about me as a mother? So at this point now, after you have your baby, everything is associated or everything is a reflection on you as a mother.
Yeah.
At least that's how you feel. And honestly, that's a lot what society preaches.
Totally.
So, oh, that child is so poorly behaved. Their mother must not be blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So when you're sitting there at 2 a.m. having these terror thoughts in your head and you're crying and you're struggling with breastfeeding and you're thinking, God, everybody else makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
Who in the world would have another baby? I don't understand why people have more than one. That thought went through my mind.
Uh-huh. Same.
You know, you're also thinking, is this all it's going to be? Is this what it's like?
Yes.
Is this all? Am I always going to feel this way?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I remember very vividly with my first child, I remember going through that, literally that exact mental progression. And then I remember calling my cousin who has 4 children. She's quite a bit older than me. And I remember calling her just in a panic going, I've made a terrible mistake. I don't know what I was thinking. How do I go back? You know, I remember I like literally panicking, saying, what do I have to do to go back? Like, do I have to go through adoption? Do I just bring him back to the hospital? What do I do? And she goes, you're not taking the baby back. I'm like, you don't understand. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I've made a mistake.
It's a horrible thing to recognize when you think, I totally regret having my child.
Yeah.
Which I want to say to all the moms out there, that does not mean you don't love them.
Right.
Okay. We're going to separate those two things. Those feelings and thoughts of I've made a huge mistake and loving your child are very different.
Absolutely.
So here I felt that same way going, I can't go back. I'm stuck.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I'm stuck. Yes.
You know, and I remember one psychiatrist saying, well, did you really want children? And
well, thank you. That's helpful.
That's great. Super. You know, I went home and I'm bawling. I called my brother and he's like, that's ridiculous. Of course you did. You know, it's just like that does not help my mom guilt right now.
Absolutely.
And it's like, if this is what it's going to be like, I can't keep doing it like this.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. So what are my options?
Yeah. Before we go into like really nailing down some definitions and busting some myths, I want to go off of what you just said as well, because when my second child, I remember how you were saying, like, you know, how does anybody ever do this again? And, you know, separating me, I've made a mistake from, I love them. I had that really smack me over the head with my second child. I remember being in the hospital right after he was born. And that first night, and the nurse came in to help me try to nurse him, to breastfeed him. And she walked in with him from the nursery and found me just sobbing. Like, I was curled up in the fetal position, sobbing in my bed. And she was like, oh, are you okay? What's going on? Because my husband had gone home to be with our toddler. And so I was there alone. And I was crying. And she goes, well, you know, here, we're just going to have you try feeding him. And I said, no. She goes, well, okay, we can try again a little bit. I said, no, you don't understand. I need somebody to take care of that baby so I can go home to my son.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I get it.
I will never forget saying that, because to me, that was exactly what it felt like. I don't know whose baby that is, but I'm not interested. I want to go home to my son, who is a toddler, and somebody else needs to deal with this situation. And the second thing that I will never forget about that encounter is that I did not have anybody come in to follow up with me about that in particular.
Oh.
And looking back on it.
What a missed opportunity for you to heal.
Right?
To get better.
Like, I literally vocalized, A, I'm not experiencing any sort of connection with this infant whatsoever. I have no desire to feed it. I have no desire to interact with it. And I'm experiencing these dissociative thoughts and I want to go. And nobody came in to be like, hi, let's talk about that.
Right.
Or, hey, you know this feeling that you're feeling? It's that's something that we need to be concerned with, that we want to work with you through. It was just, okay, I'll be back in 30 minutes and we'll try again.
We address the mom's physical health so much more than their mental health in the labor process, in the pregnancy and in the labor and the postpartum process. And we neglect what is probably happening more often than not, and that is, you know, the anxiety, the depression, these type of things, and we just aren't training people to recognize them. We're not talking with families, and just the fact that, like you said, that I remember I had my head on my husband's lap in the waiting room when I brought my son in to get his bilirubin checked, and I said to the nurse, get my doctor, something isn't right, because I didn't have the words to put to what was going on.
You don't have the actual vocabulary to say, like, this is what's happening,
right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, please get my doctor, something isn't right. And she looked like a deer in headlights and left and came back and said, I talked to your doctor and he said to drink more water. Literally, I will never get that out of my head. And it's like, well,
you didn't even get to explain what you felt was wrong.
Can you just ask me some powerful questions so I can help you tell you, and you can tell me if this is normal or not?
Like, oh my gosh,
please help me.
So along those lines, let's define some of these terms that we're talking about. So one of the acronyms that you use a lot is a PMAD, a PMAD, and that stands for?
Perinatal mood and anxiety disorders.
Okay, and what do those mean?
So perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, or PMADs, is really the overarching term for what we're talking about. So it incorporates all these different diseases or disorders or illnesses underneath that umbrella term. So we're talking about postpartum depression. We're talking about antepartum depression during your pregnancy. We're talking about postpartum anxiety. We're talking about postpartum OCD, which all these things can happen during your pregnancy as well.
Yeah.
We're talking about PTSD, postpartum PTSD, often from traumatic labors. We're also talking about panic disorders. We are even talking about postpartum bipolar. And then, of course, postpartum psychosis fits in there as well. So there's a lot of different things that fit underneath this term. And we're looking at, from when you're pregnant up to roughly a year postpartum, that's that perinatal period.
Got it. And on your website, you've got a few statistics that I found particularly fascinating, but also a little bit startling. One of them is that 1 in 7 women get postpartum depression or another perinatal mood or anxiety disorder. And that in low socioeconomic communities, the number rises to 1 in 4. And we're going to zero in on that a little bit more in just a little bit in our conversation. But I'm interested in this when it says 1 in 7 women get postpartum depression or another perinatal mood or anxiety disorder. Is it, when it comes to distinguishing between them, is it because postpartum depression is probably the most commonly diagnosed?
That, okay.
Or is it because it's the one that's most familiar to folks that we kind of tend to single that one out and kind of forget about all of these others that we just listed? Or
probably a lot of all of that.
Yeah, all the above. Okay.
But it's what's been referred to, because we talk about the baby blues, which is really just in that 2-week postpartum period, the baby blues, and you're disrupted. You know, you might cry a lot. I remember feeling like hormone surges coming over me, but it's not affecting your functionality, right? It's not affecting your day-to-day functionality. But, you know, postpartum depression, kind of people kind of go off that. So then they make them interchangeable. Baby blues, postpartum depression, depression blues. Okay. They're not the same thing at all.
Yeah.
But
they get kind of confused sometimes.
They do get confused. And that's just the term that's out there, postpartum depression. I think maybe depression in the mental health world, and this is just my, you know, everyday person perspective, but that's kind of what's been discussed probably more in history about depression, and anxiety is just getting way more attention now. And we're seeing that I think the anxiety is almost more prevalent than the depression, or they can coexist. Mine, I had both of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that that's part of the injustice of always referring to this as postpartum depression, because so many women don't experience depression, but they're experiencing something else.
Right. But then they're not identifying that what they're experiencing is anything of concern, because, well, I'm not depressed.
Right.
I'm not like experiencing the baby blues. I just can't leave my house because I can't trust my baby out there because it's going to get the influenza and die.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of that, so when it comes to either misconceptions or others, so what are some of the myths about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders that you have heard time and time again that can easily that we can debunk? There's probably about 50 of them, so let's try to narrow it down to maybe like the top 2 or 3. Is that too ambitious? Sure. Do you think?
Well, some of the myths, I think, is it's just the baby blues, and it's not the baby blues. If this is affecting your functionality, mine was acute. I mean, it said it in the hospital. Every time they brought me my baby, I'm panicked and shaking. And they're like, what's going on here? Well, hello, do something.
Right?
But, you know, so there's that. Or if it goes longer, you're starting to experience thing, and it goes longer than those 2 to 3 weeks, then that could be something. So one myth is it's not the baby blues. That's something entirely different.
Okay.
And we can't minimize depression, anxiety by saying it's the baby blues. I think another myth is that if I just wait, it will get better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it will just grow out of it. Mm-hmm. And
I just need to get used to it. We need to adjust to their new normal. Adjust to the new normal. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that phrase over and over.
And I want moms to know that postpartum depression and anxiety and all of those other parts of a PMAD are not normal.
Yeah.
They are common, but they are not normal.
Big difference.
So when we say, this is just motherhood, you don't sleep much. Yeah, but when I'm making myself stay awake just to check on the baby and I don't let myself sleep because I'm so afraid the baby's going to stop breathing, that's not normal.
Yeah.
It's normal once in a while to worry about that. I think that's pretty normal. Like, oh my gosh, they're so tiny.
Especially that first time that you wake up and you've slept for a 4-hour stretch and you're going,
what happened?
Yeah.
Right.
Go check. Oh my gosh, they slept amazing. That's normal.
Right.
Yes.
But when you can't sleep, even when that baby sleeps, that's not normal.
Yeah.
If you can't eat because of anxiety, like for me, I couldn't eat. And I had no appetite. And I'm like, wow, I look really good post-baby. What happened to all that post-baby weight? Well, when you don't eat, you know, that's what happens. And, you know, that's not normal.
Yeah.
So we got to make sure that we let moms know that if you just wait, it doesn't necessarily get better. And actually, it puts a lot of risk factors out there for chronic mental health issues. And then when it's left untreated, it can really affect the development of one's child. I say this with a grain of salt because I don't want moms to think, oh my gosh, what did I do to my child? You know, that's not necessarily the case. But when we especially look at depression and it's not being treated and how severe it can be, we aren't engaging with our babies when we're depressed like that. So it can affect the bonding and then it can affect their development. So there's a lot of risk factors for mom and baby and family. And we know that, too, if you experience it in your first pregnancy, everyone's like, well, you might not experience it again. Well, you might not.
You might not. Yeah.
Praise Lord if you don't. But the chances are that you will experience again are pretty high and it gets worse with each pregnancy. So that's another myth that, like, you know, one time, one deal, it's not going to happen. Or if it didn't happen with my first one, it's not going to happen with my second.
Yeah.
That's not true either.
Yeah. Great. No, I'm really glad that you pointed out the difference between common and normal. I feel like that's something that's huge and that we need to remember. You've talked about some of the risk factors in terms of getting a PMAD that, you know, if you've had it in a previous pregnancy, you're higher at risk to get that, to have it happen later. Are there any other risk factors or even, I hesitate to use the word causes because, you know, you don't want to be like, you know, oh, I had coffee that, you know, that one morning in my second trimester. Is that what caused this? No. Mm-hmm. But there are there other factors that can play into increasing your risk?
Right. I think causes is we should be careful in using that term because we really don't know what the exact cause is. We know things that could be influencing it. And there's a lot of factors that, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, the perfect storm. Like you've got these risk factors of having a history of depression and anxiety running in your family.
Yeah.
And then you're also just moved. You know, I just moved from Alabama to Wisconsin 3 weeks before my baby was born. And I don't know anyone. And
no,
I'm totally isolated.
System.
And it's the middle of February and I can't go outside and it's super dark out. You know, I mean,
and it's negative 40.
Right. And then let's say I had like a really traumatic labor and I had to have an emergency C-section. So there's like a perfect storm right there of all these stress factors that can play into it. So when we look at risk factors, definitely we need to look at mental health history and familial history. And I wish more providers would take a mental health history, look at their past files, look at their medications that they may have been taking. And please, if you are on a mental health medication, you find out you're pregnant, do not stop cold turkey. Get in touch with your provider and learn your options.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah. So those are risk factors. And then we have other risk factors like grief. And did you recently lose someone? Or have you gone through a major transition like moving? And then looking at support systems and then looking at how your labor went. There's so many different things like that.
It makes your head spin.
Right. You know, and then you look at like, what are your current issues, like needs? Are they being met? You know, for some women, like finding the meal for the next day is an issue.
Yeah.
And they are in survival mode. You know, how is bringing a baby into that not going to be stressful?
Totally.
So, and there's no judgment there. It's just that reality is we have different stressors in our life. And for some, sometimes their stressors are really about being able to survive through the next day.
Yeah.
So,
stability of housing,
stability.
Difficulties in a relationship,
domestic abuse, all those things play a role. And then you could have no risk factors and still get it.
Surprise.
So, So really, we just don't know. And obviously, hormonal fluctuations. So what I like to think for myself is I have this chemical component. I have this biological factor that makes me more prone or vulnerable to anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
And then you throw in this massive shift of hormones and the baby comes out and your hormones drop. And hormones affect every portion of your brain, every aspect. So for me, it affected my serotonin. It affected all that. And the result is, you know, full-blown depression and anxiety at a really severe level.
Definitely. Yeah. So when we rattle all of that off, it's a little bit mind-blowing when you think about it, that all, you know, all of these things are playing into it. So when we're trying to get our heads around that now, just like, you know, sitting at a table in 2019 trying to get our heads around it, it makes our head spin, let alone when you have literally no background, no education about it, no experience with it, and you're pregnant and you've gone through all of this. There's how we expect moms to be able to know enough about this to be able to even say, because I mean, you even went to your doctor and said something is wrong, help, and you did not get that help. So right. When we talk about the importance of those mental health screenings and advocating yourself, education is obviously such a huge component to that, but there are significant barriers that are, for better or for worse, mostly worse, set in place that are either standing in the way of women getting this care, or making it more difficult, or in some cases even preventing them from getting this care. And I want to pause on this particular point for just a couple minutes, because I feel like it's really important for us to address. So what are some of the barriers that you've seen through your experience, just as you and as a mom, but also through MMHI? What are some of those barriers that you've seen that are making it difficult for women to get quality care when it comes to their mental health?
Right. And I think you can break them into a couple categories. And I want to say one of the barriers is the disease itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a woman who is experiencing depression does not necessarily have the energy, on top of caring for a child or being pregnant, the energy to advocate and reach out for help. Right. Yeah. I've had women say, I just don't even know if I can make it out the door to go to my therapy appointment because I'm so depressed.
It's so overwhelming.
It's so overwhelming. And then the disease lies. The disease lies to you. It tells you these untruths. It tells you you're not being a good mom. It tells you your family might be better off without you. So the disease itself is just
manipulative.
Oh, and it's ugly.
I know.
And we have to let these moms know this is a disease. This isn't you. This is not you or your heart. This is the disease. So there's those obstacles. And then the other obstacles are really set up in our healthcare community.
Yeah.
And so I'm seeing lack of screening, not screening moms, not screening them prenatally. We really recommend you screen in each trimester and just do informal screenings too. How's it going? Like, how's your ability to function? How are you thinking about motherhood? You know, how are you transitioning to motherhood? Those type of questions, so that we kind of create the conversation so that moms know when something does come up, they can speak up and say, remember we talked about that? I'm starting to feel that. So, you know, that education piece, but we're not screening. So it's not common conversation. It's not everyday language. If you are pregnant and you start bleeding, you call your doctor and they're like, okay, come on in. We need to get this checked.
Let's check that out.
Right?
Yep.
So when you're having all these panic attacks and you call your doctor, they're like, okay, we'll let them know. Maybe they'll call back. We'll have them call back. And maybe a nurse calls you back. And she's like, they say to go see a therapist.
Drink some more water.
Drink more water. And then it's like, okay, so I'm supposed to see a therapist. Where am I supposed to go for a therapist?
Uh-huh.
What is the wait time? And this is a huge factor in treatment. The wait time to get the right help. We are seeing there's a shortage of psychiatrists out there and prescribers. So the wait time for psychiatrists and prescribers is often weeks, if not months.
Ugh.
You know, finding a therapist, that is near you in your network, can see you when you're not at work all day.
Right.
Or is open to you bringing in your baby or children. That's a very huge hurdle.
There's tons of
barriers.
So many
moms can't get over. And
navigating insurance in and of itself is its own monster.
And we're seeing more and more providers not take insurance because the insurance companies are not paying them. So then they're like, I'm just not going to go through that. And then
it's not worth the hassle.
Right.
And we're back to the beginning.
Right. And then these moms are like, I really need my insurance to cover this. So that's a part of it. And then we have providers who really don't want to touch mental health issues with their patient. They don't, they're the medical doctor, they're their OB, and they're like, you know, this is a job for behavioral health. Okay, so are you helping her find someone in behavioral health to address this? Because by the time a mom speaks out, she often doesn't have time to wait to get that help.
Yeah.
And I've seen moms who say, I don't want to go to this therapist because the receptionist was so rude to me. We are highly vulnerable when we're in the state of anxiety or depression.
Yeah, 100%.
And every little thing could really be an create an obstacle. The parking structure is overwhelming. Where to park? Where to find someone's office?
Because your brain is setting this up. It's like looking for places to convince you. Like, see, told you this was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Because the depression lies to you. Your confidence is just knocked down during those depression episodes. So those obstacles, and then let's look at the other obstacles, transportation, finding, you know, some people don't have reliable transportation. Some people don't have the gas money. Somebody might not have a family member to help them go. Like, they just had a C-section and they're really suffering and they can't drive. Okay, well, will somebody take them to the doctor? So all these little things that you think, oh, they can work it around. If they really wanted help, they would just do it.
Yeah,
no,
right.
It's not the case. That is not the case. I mean, the burden of finding help is tremendous. And we have to do better in helping moms be able to get the right help. And that's the other thing. You get a referral and you get a provider who does not understand perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, and they can cause more harm than good. We see that all the time. We see them hospitalizing moms for things that they shouldn't be hospitalized for, that they are not at risk at harm of themselves or another. We see providers yanking a mom off of her medication, her bipolar medication, while she's pregnant because they're just worried. They don't know how it could affect their baby, so they just yank them, which when we look at it and you talk to the perinatal psychiatric experts, they say oftentimes the risk of not being on your medication is worse than the risk of being on it. And we know that depression, anxiety can affect the fetus. So, you know, ripping these moms and then they plummet and then they have to climb back out of the depression, anxiety. Or we see a provider just minimize it. Well, I had one mom tell me that she was on the table. She was just like crying. She's complaining, telling him how horrible she feels. She can't do this. She's just full of panic. And he said, well, I don't think that's postpartum depression, but if it gets worse, let me know. And it did get worse. It got a lot worse to the point where we're lucky she's still here today. Got so bad. And suicide is one of the leading causes of death amongst postpartum women. You know, it is real. It is there. And so finding the right provider, that's another hurdle. And you would think, well, wouldn't anybody be able to address this if they're working in the behavioral health field? And you'd think, yeah, but no.
Yeah. And one of the things that we talked about on a previous podcast is even the when it comes to not just mental health providers, but medical providers in general, that there's this kind of systemic racial bias that we've seen across the board. So there are even, you know, particular populations of women for whom we take literally every single thing that we've set up to this point, and now you add implicit racial bias on top of it, or possibly even a cultural bias.
Right.
I read an article recently, I'm going to have to find it and link it in the show notes, that even talked about how difficult it is for members of the Latinx community to seek mental health help because there's just this cultural stigma or assumption that you just don't do that, and then you add in there possibly even a language barrier, and so we could just go on and on about all of these cards that are stacked against you when it comes to getting help, which is where MMHI comes in. So when it comes to what you know, you guys created this resource to advocate for women. How does MMHI stand in the gap for mothers to help them get the help that they need when it comes to PMADs?
I really like the way you describe what we do as standing in the gap, filling that gap. And that's exactly what we are there for. You know, we're there to help a mom who knows something's wrong. We're there to help her until she gets that treatment. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, of course.
Yeah.
But that gap can be really wide, and we need to close that gap. So what we do is we help moms navigate postpartum depression or PMADs through connecting them to resources, sharing information, and providing peer support. So one of our babies that we have here, and I refer to the different programs as our babies.
Makes sense.
One of them is that we created a preferred provider list, and our preferred provider list is made up of providers who have experience or specialized training in PMATs. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this includes therapists, psychiatrists, prescribers, primary doctors. We have relationships. We've screened them all. We screen them and know, okay, we can trust that they can help a
mom.
This
isn't just somebody who called up and was like, hey, I'd like to be on your list.
Right.
Yeah.
And we also make sure they understand the urgency of seeing a mom ASAP, that she needs to be seen soon. So they need to be on it when that mom calls. They need to get back to that mom ASAP. They need to basically assess if she's critical or, you know, what's the level of urgency. Work it out with the mom as far as when they can be seen, or make a qualified referral if they can't.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to gather the information on insurance for these providers. And that's one goal that we have in this year, is to just really narrow in and make sure that we can let these moms know right away who takes their insurance, who doesn't.
Yeah.
We have options for people who don't have insurance. We have options for people who are underinsured. So we want to make sure that every mom is being represented. You know, we have a therapist who specializes with the LGBTQ community. She's just fantastic. We have a therapist of color on there. We do have some Spanish speaking options. But we need more.
Yeah.
I need more. Hello, whoever's listening. But any provider listening, we need more. We need more providers that we can refer moms to all over Greater Milwaukee. So that's one thing that we do. And then we can make a warm handoff. I can let this provider know.
Yeah.
I love primary. Primary doctors, I really would love more of you on our list, because you can get a mom in quickly.
Yes.
And you can start that treatment plan for her. You can prescribe for her. And we're without excuse, because we have the Periscope Project now in Milwaukee, where any provider can call and get teleconsultation by an expert in perinatal psychiatry, Dr. Wickman, 9 to 5 every day, or I don't know the exact hours, but you get it in real time before the patient even leaves your office. So we can make those warm handoffs, and then we can say, so-and-so might be calling you, and they'll say, okay, let me know if they have any trouble, like, getting through my receptionist.
Yeah.
And then if they do, we, you know, let them know. And then sometimes they're like, can I have her number? And we'll just call and make that appointment. So,
it's trying to remove as many of those barriers that we've discussed as possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had one mom say to me, okay, I'll call her as soon as I stop crying.
Oh.
And I said, that's okay. We've all cried before when we've called her. Like,
100%.
It's okay to be crying when you call the therapist. So that's one thing that we do, and we're looking for more and more resources, but we're always looking to point moms towards treatment, and whatever that treatment looks like. So that could be therapy, it could be medication, it could be something else, but we also believe that there are many tools to help a mom heal, but some tools need to come before another. So sometimes they might need medication just so that they can get out of the house to get to their therapy appointment. And so there's no judgment at all. It's just that, you know, it's stepping stones.
Definitely.
And recovery is very cyclical. You'll have good days, bad days. Sometimes you know you're getting better because the good days, there's more good days than bad.
Yep.
So that's one thing that we do. The other thing that we're really increasing our attention with is sharing information. So one thing is just really getting in front of the healthcare community and helping them understand the mom's perspective. We consider ourselves experts in the perspective of the mom, of the patient. And what does she really need to get better? Besides needing a prescription and a therapist, she needs a doctor who's going to say, you know, let me sit here with you while you make that first call. We need a doctor to know what questions to ask. We need doctors to screen. And if you screen and get a positive screen, what do you do with that?
Right. What happens
next? So many pediatricians screen, which I love, because they see that mom so frequently in the beginning. But when you get a positive screen, are you talking to her about it? What are you talking about? Are you finding, you know, who to refer her to? What kind of help does she need? You don't have to solve the problem. You just need to help get her to the right
to the next step.
People yeah. to the next step. And I think that with educating the healthcare community, it's really just understanding the nuances of this disease. And I think another reason why doctors don't necessarily want to, you know, open a can of worms is because it looks different on every mom, and it can be hard to identify.
Totally.
Because it looks very different on each person. So what we do is, you know, we go in, we go to conferences, we just really share some anecdotal information, we share some statistics, we share facts, but we also help them understand what does a mom need. And then the other side is just our social media. And we really consider this a form of programming because we think there's a lot of misinformation out there.
So no, we've made, you don't say.
Yes.
There's misinformation on social media?
Well, just Google it.
Oh,
it's okay.
I find that hard to believe.
I know.
If it's on the internet, it must be true.
Well, if it's from MMHI, it's true. Just want you to know.
There we go.
It is true. So we are committed to providing accurate information on PMADS. We only focus on PMADS, so you can, you know, go on Facebook, go on Instagram, go on Twitter. You will find every day something about PMADS, something about either an encouragement, you know, what is the mom thinking? Like, no, mom, the family would not be better off without you.
Yeah.
And then we'll, you know, provide information, articles, stories, anecdotes, microposts. So we really are pushing that because of the misinformation. And this can globally get around. I mean, we've had people contact us from Indonesia saying wow. they needed help.
That's amazing.
It really is amazing. And we were able to provide a resource for them in Indonesia. We refer
Holy
constantly.
Cow.
I know. We refer constantly to Postpartum Support International, and they have resources all over the country. And we have moms reaching out to us, family members. You know, I had the brother of a mom in another state reach out for her because he was so afraid for what she was going through in her pregnancy. And, you know, we were able to connect her and get her, find her help in her
right.
area.
Well, and that's a good thing to point out, too, that, like, you know, even if you yourself either are not planning to be pregnant or, you know, go through that, you know, there are women in your life who may be experienced, who may need you to be that person who does what the interviewer did for the Duchess of Sussex and say,
how are you?
Are you okay? And not just like, not even just are you okay, but asking them, you know, how are you sleeping? You know, have mm-hmm. you, when's the last time you went outside? When's the last time you wore real pants?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what's giving you joy right now? Because I know one thing that I'm really guilty of is if somebody says to me, are you okay? How are you doing? Fine. I'm fine.
We know what fine means.
Yeah. I'm that person. Yeah. I will be fine for whoever I need to be fine for. I'm very good at being fine.
Right.
You know, but when somebody dials in on, no, but like, what's giving you joy right now? What's making you smile? If I sit there and I go, nothing. Then now we're getting to it.
Is this what you expected? Is motherhood
no.
what you expected? How
no.
so?
Yeah.
Those type of
there
questions.
You go.
A little more
yes.
open-ended. What does your day look like?
Absolutely.
How connected are you feeling with the baby?
Yeah.
I mean,
what are you eating? What are you eating? What did you eat today?
Right.
Did you eat today?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So asking those type of questions and you know, moms need help with someone washing their kids. They need someone to drive them to their appointments. They need someone to call on their behalf. Like
right.
all those things we can do for them.
Be that extra set of hands when they're, you know, so they don't have, they can focus on answering the questions rather than, you know, what if the baby needs to be changed or fusses or whatever.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. I mean, I remember going with somebody to the chiropractor's office. She was so overwhelmed and she needed to take her baby in to the chiropractor. And I just went with to help with the other kids.
Yeah,
because it was just
totally.
Too much for them. And then I left the best for last.
Ooh, nice. Yes, nice.
And this is really our baby. And it's our peer support program. You know, we provide peer support. We do so by having an online peer support group. It's called Circle of Hope. It's on Facebook because that's the only venue we can do this in at this point. And you can't search for it. It's confidential. It's closed. The only way you can be added is if one of our administrators adds you.
Yep.
It's for pregnant up to roughly a year postpartum moms in the greater Milwaukee area and kind of in the outskirts too.
Yeah.
I mean, we just have to keep it manageable. That's why we can't add just anybody to it from anywhere. But we will connect you to somebody. We will try and connect you to somewhere where you can. But it's for mom in any part of their perinatal PMAD journey. So they could feel like something's not right, but have never spoken up. They could be in recovery.
Yeah.
And it's just moms being there for each other and saying, oh, I was there too. Yes. That's not what I had when I went through this with my son. I did not have that. I went to one in-person support group and really never got a chance to talk. So, and I had the only reason I ended up going to, they call it the crisis center, one night, per my doctor's, request. The crisis center sent me home, which I wasn't very happy about because I was not doing well.
Yeah.
But the one reason why I was like, okay, I'll go is because my friend from church brought over a meal and told me about her friend in her neighborhood that they were all helping right now, who was 6 months postpartum and very depressed and went to the crisis center.
Huh.
So I knew, okay, I can do that. So peer support is just what really helps a mom fully recover.
Yeah.
Moms see other moms getting better. Moms see other moms doing treatment. They get the courage to ask for help. And without it, I think a lot of moms would fall through the cracks.
Totally,
so we have that peer support group, and then we just do a lot of one-on-one peer support. It's all online most of the time.
It's a great example of social media being put to the use that it really showing what it can do when used well.
Well,
you
know? I mean, we monitor that group. We have strict guidelines. We have very firm boundaries. We have professionals, people with background monitoring it too. So it's not like it's just willy-nilly. Then other times it's just one-on-one messaging with somebody saying, I know you're having a hard time. It does get better. It will get better. Okay, what's the next step? Well, have you talked to your doctor? Okay, well, I don't know what to say. Okay, well, maybe say this when you call and make sure that you request they call you back today.
Yeah.
So a lot of that one-on-one coaching and pointing them towards who can help them. So the peer support is just crucial in any struggle that anyone's going through. You need peers who get it, but particularly for our moms, because they might not have anyone in their family that's supportive. They might have someone using it against them in their family. I could write you a book on mother-in-law stories.
Oh boy.
The obstacles are huge, and moms don't need shame. They don't need guilt. They do it plenty enough on their own to themselves. They need support, and they might not know what they need. And so that's why we're there.
So how can moms connect with you? How can they reach out to MMHI in the quickest, easiest, most barrier-free way possible?
Right. Send us an email. You can email us at info@mmhimke.org. If you're on Facebook, you can go to our Facebook page, Moms Mental Health Initiative, and message us that way. We do not have a phone number because we don't have the ability to manage that. We aren't managing crises. So it's all online. We say we'll get back to you within 24 hours. It's usually much faster than that. And if we don't get back to you within 24 hours, please email us, because sometimes we try and check our spam folder, but sometimes it disappears. It doesn't even make it to spam. And it's lost in the ether worlds or whatever you
ain't that the
call
truth.
It now. But so you can email us, message us, even just saying, I think I'm going through something, we can help you identify what that is. Go on our website, momsmentalhealthmke.org. We have great, great lists of the different types of disorders. So, what does depression look like? What does anxiety? And it's more like, what does it look like for a mom?
Yes.
Or, and I don't want to just say moms, because men get this too. And you don't have to have given birth or have a biological child to experience it. Adoptive parents experience it. It doesn't discriminate, from those who have no resources, low resources, extreme stress in their life to people like the princess in England. So even the Duchess, like, it doesn't discriminate. And it does women of color, you know, it's a greater proportion of women of color suffer. And a lot of that is because of institutionalized racism and stress of racism. And it doesn't matter what their socioeconomic background is.
Yep.
You know, all in all, women need to advocate for themselves more, but we really need to listen and trust that moms know what's going on and trust that when they say something's not right, you listen and say, okay, let's figure out what's not right.
And advocate for one another rather than trying to rationalize it away or whatever.
Right. Because without a healthy mom, we can't have a healthy baby. And your baby wants you. The baby does not want the perfect mom. They want you and who you are. And they don't need to have everything done the right way. And I say the babies don't read the books. Right?
They don't read those books.
And, you know, and it just looks different. Motherhood looks different on every person. I sent my second child to the nursery all night, every night, and said, I don't care if this affects my milk. I'm going to take something to help me sleep. And I'm sleeping all night long because I need a fresh start. You know, breastfeeding, what works for you? You know, we just say whatever is right. It's a deeply personal decision. It's something you work out with your partner, with your provider. No shame, but don't judge yourself on whether you're doing things that you think is right or not. Okay, the baby just wants you.
Today's My Milwaukee Mom moment comes from Carrie. She's from Wauwatosa, and she says, when my kids were younger, we were driving somewhere in the car, and the kids were talking about babies being born. My daughter, who was about 7 or 8 at the time, said, I could never have a baby because I don't want to be cut open. I'd had cesarean sections with my kids. I explained, well, not every mom has to have her belly cut open to have a baby. And she giggled and, of course, asked, well, how else would it come out? I said, from your vagina. There was a silence for a good few minutes as I glanced in the rearview mirror and noticed the look of sheer and utter disgust cross her face. Then she mumbled, I am never, ever having a baby.
That's when you have to, like, pre-think what you're going to say in response. Because it could just, like, you just could go down a rabbit hole.
Oh, for sure. I legit went down that rabbit hole with my son. I don't remember which. So I have 3 sons, and I don't remember which one it was that literally brought up this very question, because you could actually see it on his face, him trying to do like the biological math of knowing that, okay, I was in your belly, but how did I get out? And I explained it like anatomically, and he would just, like, for him, it just, he could not figure it out. I mean, he was just giving me this blank stare, because it's almost like he's, you know, he's seen a baby. And so he sees the size of a baby. And he's,
we don't get that either, but, you know, he'll never get it. And I don't think anyone else does either.
I was dying because I could see it on his face. He's looking at me and I'm following his eye. And you can see it in his head.
And you're like, yeah, and it is rough, and it hurts, and it's really painful.
And I'm like holding up my hands in a circle. And he's just looking at me. Oh, my gosh. And I can't remember which kid it was, but I just remember.
And he goes, I don't think I really wanted to know.
Like, it was my middle one. It was my Micah. Now I remember. And him just like being like, oh, never mind. Because I think when I held my hands up to show what 10 centimeters actually looked like, he was like, I'm out. I'm done. Never mind. Can I have a snack?
This show's like, I'm not that old, but I watch things like that old people watch, you know. I was like really into Murder, She Wrote for a while, but it was like Carol Burnett said something like, if you want to describe what childbirth is like, you take your bottom lip and you pull it up all the way over your entire head. Yeah, that's just a portion of what it feels like. It's actually way worse.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm not. I don't want to scare any pregnant moms.
Sorry, kids.
It's amazing. It's wonderful.
All right. As we wrap up our conversation today, Sarah, just to get to know you a little bit better, tell me an unpopular opinion that you hold.
Well, I know there are some people who will say, I totally hold that opinion too, but I dislike gum chewing. I dislike hearing it. I dislike seeing it. I really dislike the taste of it, but it's more on other people. I cannot take it. I want my misophonia people right there to raise their hands.
No,
who else gets really irritated by certain sounds and certain noises? But, oh, gosh.
So is it just gum chewing or is it just mouth sounds in general?
It's both, but I would say gum chewing is probably the worst.
Gum chewing is
really
the worst.
And really loud, like...
In the summer, can you handle being around people who are eating corn on the cob?
I can. Like,
okay.
It's weird how it's different
things. This
intrigues
me. Can you
tell? If my husband is eating corn chips in the same room as me, it's just... And it's not just I don't like it. Like, certain things, they will put me into a rage. Like,
ooh.
It's so... And you know what? On Facebook, I looked for this, and there is a misophonia support group. So
I bet.
And I went on there, and I'm like, awesome. I'm not alone.
Yeah.
But it's just like... Don't chew gum loud. Like, we don't want to hear it.
Right.
And don't pop bubbles. And don't, like, I don't want to see it. It's so gross looking. It's so, I remember in fifth grade, we had to do, like, white elephant gifts in our classroom. And somebody, like, gave me a present. And inside it was chewed gum. And I think I just, I mean.
You have gum-related trauma.
I totally do. I totally do. And
Well, what do you know?
So, I just. You know, my some of my family members, my husband's family, just laughs and makes fun of me. And my one sister-in-law really hates, like, creepy-looking dolls.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter went through a phase where she really distorted her dolls and made them creepy-looking and, like, some of my old dolls. And so I'd post pictures and send to my sister-in-law, and she's like, I'm going to get you back someday. And she did. And she sent my kids a box full of, like, 600 pieces of... purple bubble gum, like grape bubblicious. And finally, at one point, I told my husband, throw that away or I'm gonna explode, get ugly fast.
Oh my gosh.
My unpopular opinion. Nobody chew gum around me. Just let you know that.
Noted. Okay. What about your My Milwaukee pick? This could be a place, a store, a restaurant, a brand, a business, or just something in the greater Milwaukee area that you're like, I just love this and I want to tell people about it.
Okay. I have two and I'll be really quick. One place I really love, and it's, this is just a tip for all the moms out there, is I really love Cedarburg Toy Company in Cedarburg. And the owners of that store, Natasha and her husband, are wonderful. And you can find a gift for anybody there. And I've been going there since my son was two, and they know us by name.
Oh, cute.
And they just know, it's just wonderful. And they see your kids grow and they're like, oh, look how big you are. And they talk to them and remember names. And so I just love that place. And I really just want to give them a shout out. But I also really love Lion's Den Gorge Nature Preserve. Sorry, I had to look.
That's a mouthful.
It is a massive mouthful. It's in Grafton in Ozaukee County, and you can hike different paths there, and it's on the bluffs of Lake Michigan. And you can, like, hike the bluffs, but then you can go down to the beach. And depending on time of year, depends on, you know, if you want to go down. But in the summer, you can go down there and, like, hang out on the beach and go swimming, and the kids can just explore. Or you can go on some big hikes. You can bring a dog on a leash. And please pick up if your dog does something that... Please
just
pick it up.
Just be cool.
Be cool.
Be a responsible pet owner.
Exactly.
And do the right thing here.
I have two rescues, so I love to bring them there. And it's just like there's seasons where all the wildflowers are out, and I love water. I need to be by water, and it's just breathtaking.
Awesome. And finally, what's in your cart? So this could be something that's either been hanging out in your cart that you haven't pulled the trigger on yet, or something that you've purchased recently that you like, or something that you're looking for.
I really want some cast iron pots and pans.
Really?
Yes.
What's the obsession with them?
So one is I'm married 19 years now.
Ooh,
and
congrats.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Crazy. And so all my pots and pans, I had the nonstick kind, the Keflon nonstick, and they're all just wearing out, and like the nonstick stuff,
like
as it comes
off,
up, and
yeah.
That's like not healthy. And and I know like cast iron lasts forever, and things cook so well in it, and it just, it's safe, it's healthy to use. And so I got a couple pieces at Marshall's, I think. My neighbor bought them for me because she has some beautiful cast iron pots and was telling me you should try cooking them. And so I have a couple and I just really want to fill out, but they can be so pricey. The good ones are really pricey. So I haven't.
My parents collect them, actually.
Oh, do they have any they want to give away?
I could ask.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I love the old vintage looking. I mean,
they literally have them like displayed in their kitchen. Oh. I think if I were to guess, I'd say my mom probably has at least 40 pieces. Like 40.
I'm looking for least. Like a small.
She's like, oh, okay, let me just go ahead and place my order. But what I was going to say is that they find a lot of them at like flea markets and resale shops and things like that is where they tend to find a lot of them.
And they last forever.
Yeah, so if you take care of them.
They do. And, you know, now like there's so many cool colors you can get. But I'm not really much of a cook anyways. But if I'm going to cook, I'd like to cook in one of those.
There you go. Well, I'll see what I can find out for you.
Thank you.
So where can people find out more about you, connect with you? I know we've talked about the MMHI website. But that social media was that part of what you guys do. So how can people in particular connect with you on social media?
I would encourage you to go to our Facebook page and message us and just say, what do you need? Or, hey, Sarah, we're looking for this. You can email us at info@mmhimke.org. You can email me at sarah@mmhimke.org. But those are, you know, we're on that all the time. You know, we're checking our messages and our Facebook messaging. So please just contact us. We are happy to come and share the word with your communities, your mom groups, your doctor's offices, your staff. You know, it's just an important cause, and we're here to help you figure out what's the best way to work with your families, with your patients, and then just also how to be a good friend to someone going through it.
100%. And if you're looking for a nonprofit organization to support with your generous giftings, may I recommend Mom's Mental Health Initiative in
you
Milwaukee?
May.
I will humbly recommend that because the work that you all do is so important. It's literally life-saving. And I'm just so thrilled that we were able to have a conversation about this. There's obviously we could talk for hours on this stuff. So go to their website, find out more, find ways to get involved and support this fantastic organization, and ask the moms in your life, are you okay? Oh, sorry. That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. For more information on what you just heard, check out the show notes and find us on Instagram @MilwaukeeMomCast. If you enjoyed this episode and know someone who should tune in, please share it. Grab a screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories and tag us so we can say thanks. Even better, take a moment and leave a review on iTunes, which helps us more than you realize. We'll look forward to you joining us on our next episode of Milwaukee MomCast.